With our blessing, Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, Asher Bachar Banu Mikol Hamim, V'Natan Lanu Et Torato, Baruch Ata Adonai Notein HaTorah. Happy Rosh Chodesh Adar. It's so exciting. It's the month. Did everybody get my email except for Margie, did you get my email last night about class today? I just want to make sure that everybody's on my list.
Maybe I just didn't see it.
Okay. I sent it last night just as a reminder. I just want to make sure who's on my list and who I don't have on my list. So if you wouldn't mind checking when you go home, just to make sure, because I just want to make sure that everybody's getting everything that I want you to have. So Rosh Chodesh Adar. This is Rosh Chodesh Adar Bet. The second Adar, we've already been in a month of Simcha, and now the Simcha increases even more. So if you saw my email, it said what we're going to talk about is about the number 13. Now 13, for in most of the world, is considered what?
Unlucky
number. So much so that you can go to the fanciest hotels, the nicest apartments, buildings that are multiple floors, and almost none of them will have written on their elevator floor 13. Which is kind of stupid, because obviously any floor that has 13 floors has 13 floors, whether you put the number 13 on it or not. So it's the number 13 is considered unlucky in the Gentile world. So the question is, why is 13 considered unlucky? So I looked into it to see. And it's something that has so little to do with us. You'll never think of 13 as being unlucky ever again, which you probably never did anyway. But it has to do in the Western world with the Last Supper. And it has to do with Judas being the 13th person at the table. And the fact that he betrayed, according to Christian mythology, that he betrayed Jesus. And it is based on that that the number 13 is considered unlucky. This may also be related to an ancient Norse myth about the gods having a dinner, and there were 12 there, and the 13th god comes, and the 13th god is the god that sounds, his name is Leki, which sounds a lot like...
Leki or Loki?
Maybe Loki.
L-O-K-I?
L-O-K-I, yeah. Loki.
He's sort of the trickster.
He is the trickster.
He's the one that his actions lead to Ragnarok or the end of... the world.
End of the world. And he comes to this dinner. He's the 13th one who comes. And he convinces one of the other gods to kill the god of happiness and joy. And that the world then is plunged into darkness. So it sounds a little bit like the 12 disciples and Judas kind of thing, only literally resurrected for the purposes of a religious tradition. But be that as it may, this number 13 is considered unlucky from this Norse tradition and from the Christian tradition. So that, of course, has absolutely nothing to do with us, and we consider the number 13 to be fortunate, that it is a lucky number, and we're going to find out why. And why is it even a question now? It has to do with where we are in the calendar. Batsheva, would you mind just closing the doors for me? Thank you. So, there are 12 months of the Hebrew calendar. That's if we have one Adar. When we have two Adars, that means that this Adar now is the 13th month. The 13th month is an extra month. So number one, it feels lucky because we're always asking, oh, I wish I could have an extra month. So it feels like, oh, that's good. So now I have an extra month and this is it. So this is the extra month. But even more than that, as we know, all of the mazalot, all of the astrological signs are Jewish in origin, and they correspond to the 12 Hebrew months. So there are only 12 of them, which means that the 13th month has no mazal. It has no astrological sign associated with it. And because it has no mazal, it means that we are outside of the realm of mazal during the month of Rosh Chodesh Bet. So when we are in this 13th month, it says there's ein mazal. Now there's already a phrase that says ein mazal b'Yisrael. There is not a mazal, there is not an astrological sign, there is not a force that impacts the Jewish people in any case, because we report directly to Hashem, and Hashem has control over everything, and the mazalot, the the powers that come from the stars are a servant of God. They are not in place of God. But even so, we still have the idea of different mazalot during each of the Hebrew months. So, for example, the month of Tishrei is the month of Libra, of the scales of justice, which is the time of judgment for all of the holidays in the month of Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, etc., Shmini Atzeret, Hoshana Rabbah. All of those are the month of judgment. So each of the mazalot, and there's a beautiful book that's written. It's called The Wisdom in the Hebrew Months, and it goes through each of the mazalot and what is connected to them, and it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Until you get to Adar Bet. It's like, Ein, there is no mazal. So the word mazal is related to the Hebrew word nozel, which means just like a... I'm sorry?
What's that spelled? Sorry.
Mazal?
Yeah. Just M-A-Z-E-L?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Like mazel tov? Like when
yeah,
you say...
that's what I was thinking, but it seemed too easy.
Yeah, no, mazel tov means good mazel, and the word is related to the Hebrew word nozel. And the word nozel is literally like the English word nozzle, like a nozzle like you have on a hose that allows the flow of whatever to come to us. So it says that we all have mazel. So when you go to a simcha and you say mazel tov, what you're saying is that these people have been the beneficiaries, the recipients of this wonderful flow of divine energy and divine whatever that is blessing them. And that there are things that we see also, if you see somebody, a very righteous person who is suffering, and they say they don't have mazel. They don't have mazel. Or somebody who is wicked, who is doing well, so they've got mazel. It's like it doesn't seem to line up, but there's some flow that is coming to them. With the exception of Adar Bet. So what happens in Adar Bet? It says all bets are off. All bets are off in Adar Bet. All bets are off because there isn't a mazel. And anything that has been decreed by mazel for a person is open for renegotiation during the month of Adar, and specifically beginning on Rosh Chodesh. When the month starts is always when the dynamic spiritual energy of that month is thrust into full force. Begins with Rosh Chodesh, which is today. So, starting today is the time, it says, to daven and to pray for all the things, like if your life has been going in a certain direction and you've kind of accepted your fate, accepted the way it is, it's like, now it can all change. The month of Adar, in any case, is a month where things turn around and turn over because it's the month of Purim. And Purim, the whole point of Purim is that there was the decree of death against the Jewish people that seemed immutable, seemed final, and in the end, turn over and it's not. So the fact that that can happen, and that's the spiritual energy, that's the spiritual thing that's going on during the month of Adar, in any case, Adar Bet has it basically in spades. It means that we have this tremendous opportunity to pray and to change the mazel. It says, in what areas of our life? It says specifically in three. It kind of covers everything. Your life, your livelihood, and your children. Okay? Other than that, nothing. But just that. Okay, so your life, which means, like, how is your life going, and your health and sickness and just how things have been going. And it can be with children. It can be that you want children, you haven't had children. You have children and you wish you didn't have the children. The children you have are giving you tsoras, or their lives are challenging, or whatever it is in the realm of children and in the realm of livelihood. That, you know, you've never had so much luck. Your business ventures have always kind of gone down. It's like this is the time where that can turn around, where there is not a projection line. We usually make projection lines, and we make projections, and we make predictions about how things are going. We see that things have been going like this, and we say, okay, at the rate we're going, it's going to tank about right here. Instead of saying, it's been going like that, and it could, in an instant, turn and go up. It says, this is what we are praying for. This is the month of Adar Bet, where we have this power. So what's the nature of our prayer? So it goes back to... again, having to do with Purim in the month of Adar, is who was the one who caused our decree of death and annihilation in Shushan those many thousands of years ago?
Haman.
Okay, it was Haman's idea to annihilate the Jewish people. Haman, we know, is a descendant of King Agag, and Agag was the king of the Amalekites. Okay, the Amalekites are our are our arch enemy, mostly and solely because they want to destroy us for no reason. They want to just destroy us and annihilate us, just as people today are carrying that out. If any of you saw the horrific carnival float in Belgium, that was absolutely disgusting, yes. That was a thing of Hasidic, like a mockery of Hasidic Jews, dressed as Hasidic Jews. That was like I don't know, it was paper mache, I don't know what they made it out of. Huge float with the Jews with a rat holding in one hand and sitting on money bags, and then an entourage of people dressed as Orthodox Jews saying shalom, shalom, to show that they're the ones who are responsible for the high prices and the economic woes in Belgium. So some things never change, but they will change eventually, and Purim is actually our comfort in this, because Haman's decree gets overturned. Haman, as an Agagite and a descendant of Amalek, the Amalekites first rear their ugly heads, so it's just interesting that this happened in Adar, that this Belgium parade was in the month of Adar. So it's very Haman-like. So with that, it says when we look at it, it's like, what was the battle? So the battle of the Amalekites come and attack the Jewish people as soon as they leave Egypt, after the splitting of the sea. So we're going to turn to that for a moment to take a look and see what was the strategy for defeating Amalek. And that's going to tell us what the nature is of our prayers during the month of Adar.
I'm going to guess. You got to get up there.
Okay, you're going to have up there, yes? Did you see Rebbetzin Mizrahi? Did you see Rebbetzin Mizrahi?
No.
Ah, okay, so that means that you are a prophetess. Okay, so let's take a look at it. We're going to turn to Parsha.
From your lips.
Yes, I wish.
Wasn't it King Og, or was it Aog? King Og of the
Agag. A-G-A-G. Oh, King A-G-A-G. Agag. Yes, he was the one who went to battle against King Saul.
Okay.
But Saul did not kill him. And then Haman came from that. But we're going to put that aside, because what we want to talk about is the initial battle that took place, and it's at the end of Parsha Bishalach. So let's take... So we'll turn to the Parsha of Bishalach, and if you turn to page 391.
But there was also an Og.
So that's a different conversation. Yes, we're not going to talk about that today. Okay, so the Jewish people had crossed, and they had been full of faith in God. So here's a challenge for the Jewish people. The Jewish people are usually good with being able to say, yes, God did work all those miracles for us in the past. And we're usually good to say, yes, and God will redeem us in the future. I can believe that. I'm talking about people of faith, people who aren't. That's a different story. Where we are challenged is, but is he here right now? It's like, I'm good with the past, and I'm good with the future, but the here and now, I'm kind of questioning that, because I look at my life, and I don't have hindsight, where I can say, yeah, things worked out, and the future is, you know, an unknown and a dream in the future. It's right now that seems kind of murky to me. And the Jewish people ask this question. You could say, how could they have a question of faith when they had just experienced all this? Well, that was the past. I'm good with the past. And I'm good with, yes, God's going to bring us. But now is my problem. And that is what the Jewish people ask that question. So if you go to verse 7, on page 391 there. And Esther, would you like to read that for us? Would you like to read verse 7 for us?
In Hebrew?
Sure. Go ahead, read it in Hebrew for us. Impress us. Okay, and in English, let's see. Would you like to read the English for us?
He called the place Massa u'Meribah, because of the contention of the children of Israel, and because of their test of Hashem, saying, Is Hashem among us or not?
And they mean right now. So that's what they're saying. Hayesh Hashem bekirbenu im ayin is like Hashem with us now? Like, did he leave? Like, what's happening? And right after that is when Amalek comes and battles the Jewish people. It says that place of doubt is where Amalek comes in. The way that this is going to be fought is very strange. Moshe says to Joshua in verse 8, choose people for us and go do battle with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand. Joshua goes and does that, does the battle, and Moshe and Aaron and Hur ascended to the top of the hill. It happened when Moshe raised his hand, Israel was stronger, and we lowered his hand, Amalek was stronger. Moshe's hands grew heavy, so they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur supported his hands, one on this side and one on that side, and he remained with his hands in faithful prayer until sunset. And through that process, Joshua was able to weaken Amalek and its people with the sword. So the question is, what won the war? The sword or the hands? The hands. The hands won, because it said very specifically, when Moshe's hands were down, the Amalekites prevailed, and when the hands were up, then the Jewish people prevailed. So it's like, what was that, holding your hands up? So we hold our hands up to demonstrate a lot of different things. What's some of the reasons why, like, we put our hands up?
If the Broncos score.
Okay, if there's to hooray. What
something
else?
Something important.
What else, what do we raise our hands for?
The rabbi does the priestly blessing.
Okay, good. So to be a channel of something is for when, and it's the Kohanim that are doing the priestly blessing. When they bless us, they raise their hands. It's called raising their hands. And then have you ever even heard the expression in English, like, I'm just throwing up my hands? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or if when you're really like, I am at my wit's end, it's just, I'm throwing up my hands. And we just do that like, oh, and we do it automatically. It seems to be almost an innate response, like, ugh. And that means, like, I can't do it. I'm done with this. It says, that's what those hands up meant. It wasn't like, raise my hands, God is with us. Put our hands down, God is not with us. It was, Hashem, we have no power. Our hands have no power. I am helpless here. It's all in your hands. My hands are nothing. As soon as I put my hands down, it's like, okay, I'm going to get your hands ready and to do something. It's like, that's when the Jewish people did not prevail. It's like, when you think it's on you, that's when you're not going to be successful. When you put it all into Hashem's hands, that's when they were successful, which is why his hands needed to stay up to show that. And we have the phrase, in fact, my son painted me. I was going through a very challenging time, and he was with they were in town in Denver, and he was with my grandson, and they were at, I don't know, it was some little art place, and they made me a little poster that I have hung on the door in my study. You know, nothing fancy. It was like butcher papers. It was like, you know, like this. And it says, Hakol Bidei Shamayim. Everything is in the hands of God. Everything is in the hands of heaven. It's like, as long as we know, so is an interesting juxtaposition, because it's not like they just sat there in the camp and Moshe sat with his arms up and then the Amalekites just came and they were miraculously, you know, vanquished. Joshua still fought. He fought. But when you fight and you know that it's really that you're just a vehicle and a vessel for God's strength, that's different than saying my strength and my power and my sword are what's accomplishing it. As soon as we say it's about me, that's when we're not going to succeed. As soon as we say Hakol Bidei Shamayim, everything is in the hands of heaven, that's when the Jewish people were successful. It says, so what is the prayer of Rosh Chodesh, Adar, and the month of Adar? Is Moshe's prayer. And so I was watching a video of a class, one of my favorite speakers, her name is Rebbetzin Yamima Mizrahi. She's funny, she's insightful, she's great, she's Israeli. She's actually Moroccan, I think, or maybe some other thing. But anyway, she's great. And she was speaking to a large group of women. It says, first of all, women's prayers are especially powerful. It says, God cannot refuse the tears of a bat melech. He cannot refuse the tears of the daughter of the king, and the daughter of the king is us. that we are the daughters of the King. It says our tears. It says like when a little girl cries, if she has a normal father, when a little girl cries to her daddy, and mothers say, she has him wrapped around his little her little fingers. Like, well, how'd that happen? Yeah, it's like, yep, that's how it happens. It's like the father cannot tolerate, stand to ignore the tears of his daughter. So the prayers and tears of a Jewish woman are the Benot Melech. It's like, they're going to be answered. And our prayer is literally, and it feels really stupid to do, but I did it this morning just to see how stupid it felt, but also interesting, is to pray with your hands up. It feels like a Baptist revival. You know, Lord, help me. You know, it's like, you don't associate that. Maybe like with Tevye, he was like, did that. Hey, God, make me a wealthy man. You know, he's doing that. But we tend to not think that's like too, like, I don't know what for us. But it says, that's the prayer of Adar. And if you can't quite muster doing that, you can do it in the privacy of your home so nobody's looking at you, is to put your hands up and say, Hashem, this is in your hands, and to ask for everything that you need in your life, in the realm of health, livelihood, your children, your family, the Jewish people, whatever it is, until your arms get tired. Until your arms get tired. You don't have to go to the same length that Moshe did and be propped up and have someone sit there and hold your arms up. But the same idea. So those are the prayers of the month of Adar.
Now, when like on Shabbos and weddings, don't they always dance with their...
Dancing, but that's just for dancing. That doesn't. I don't think it has anything to do with it, but it's a good connection, but I don't think it does. Okay. But putting your hands up, and again, to hands up, again, like the Kohanim. Like you said, when the Kohanim bless the Jewish people, they realize they're a vehicle for the blessing. They're not the source of the blessing. So their hands are up here, Hashem, you know, bless the Jewish people, and the blessing is like coming like through their fingers there to the Jewish people. So that's the connection that we want to have. So the 13th month is a great month for us. The other connection we have to 13 are the 13 are that we associate 13 with the 13 attributes of mercy. Those are the 13 attributes of God that were revealed to the Jewish people after the sin of the golden calf. We love the number 13. 13 is also the gematria, the numerical equivalent of the word ahava, which means love, and the word echad, which means one. So 13 is like one of our favorite numbers. So even in a not too long from now, but hopefully it should just be a little bit longer on Pesach, when we're singing Who Knows One, and we get to the number 13, that's the last number that's part of the song. It's like, who knows 13? I know 13. 13 are the attributes of God. And they are the attributes that we emulate because they are a demonstration of God's ahava, love, and God's echad, God's oneness. So 13 for us is a great number. It's the 13th month is a great month. All of the barriers are open. It says like all the things. I had a friend who went to school in Israel, and I'm not sure she hadn't done great at the school, and they had her transcripts, but there was a fire at the school and all of the records were burned, and so there weren't any transcripts of how not well she had done there. And it was like, oh, okay, so I get like a fresh start. There's like nothing, there's no projection here, like she did bad, and she's going to keep on doing bad. It's like fresh start, blank sheet, you're starting over again. This is the 13th month. It says take advantage of the opportunity. Even more so is the language that we use about ourselves, to ourselves, about how we put ourselves in different boxes. I am this, I am that, this is how I think, this is what I do, this is what I've always done. The most destructive form of predictions are the predictions we make about ourselves and who we are. I've always done A, B, or C. I've never been good at 1, 2, 3. Any of those things is like, says who? Says who? That may be the past, but that's not the present, and it's not determinative of the future. You get to start fresh. There's no mazel hanging over you saying that you are a certain thing. So this is a very powerful month. Okay, so take advantage, enjoy. Oh, and I have one more thing to share with you. Yes, Marla.
Okay, I know I came in a little late, but I'm a little confused. What was, when Amalek came, at what complaints were they complaining about that they deserved Amalek to attack them? Because they had the water where they were, you know, they needed water. And I remember Hashem said, no, they should have the water. That's a justified complaint.
Right.
But they were complaining earlier about the food, and then the quail came, and then the manna came. So at what point, like, were they punished?
What was the complaint? It was for asking that question, is God amongst us or not?
So is that, you mean, well, Moses said it, but I mean, so it,
Moses did not say that.
But he was saying that the people were saying that.
Because the text is saying that the Jewish people said, is Hashem among us or not? That demonstration of lack of faith was a chink in the armor of the Jewish people that allowed for the Amalekites to gain strength.
So, but they said that, like, before or after, like, the water, or it doesn't say when. Like, he's saying, he's kind of summarizing, well, I'm going, you know, God tells him to do all this because the people said it. But it
yes.
doesn't say when they actually said it, or what they said it after.
I think it's their general attitude of what they were saying. They were saying it throughout enough of a time that, yes, they needed water. But because Hashem says here, when verse 4, Moshe cries out to Hashem saying, what shall I do for this people? A bit more and they will stone me. Mm-hmm. And then
he tells them to get the water.
Yes. So honestly, Marla, I don't know the exact timing and logistics of the statement.
Okay.
But I can tell you that it was powerful enough that it was... You all have fallen. You are not. You're not where you should be. So it says that the Jewish people, our emunah, our faith and trust in Hashem, is like our spiritual immune system. When we break the faith, it's like someone who loses their immunity, and then they become susceptible to anything that comes their way. It's like AIDS. People don't die of AIDS. They die of the complications from the diseases that come and attack them because they don't have an immune system. Says that we lost our immune system by our expression of complete doubt there. By saying, is Hashem amongst us? Meaning right now. Again, not the past. It wasn't like they forgot Egypt. And it's not like they don't believe it's going to be in the future. It's like, what's with now? It's like, what have you done for me lately? Like, what are you doing for me right now? And it's like, that's what, and you know, we respond, but I've done this for you and I'm going to do that for you. It's like, okay, great, but never mind. What do you, right now, that's our problem. So expressing that faith is where we are on the tikkun, the repair of that.
I just, the way you said that, it struck me, and I know that there probably is no reason for it, but the word emuna and immunity.
Oh, immunity. Oh, that's so funny. Yes, immunity. I like that. Yes, we need immunity. It's like, you're saying that wrong. No, absolutely, I'm saying it exactly right. That's very good, immunity. We need immunity. And that protects us, which is why the Jewish women are the ones who were always so protected from doubts, is because they had such emunah. Even the word aim, meaning mother, is the root of the word emunah. It says women, mothers, the Jewish women are the bedrock of emunah in Hashem, and staying focused not just on what happened before and not what's just going to happen in the future, but being able to kind of bring it all together right now. I will act today because of my emunah, being strong, recognizing what happened before, and having faith in what's going to happen in the future. Faith in the future is kind of weak emunah, because it's kind of more, it's not here. It's like you don't have to do anything. It's what's your emunah right now? So emunah is always about putting it into action. Like, what do you do that demonstrates emunah? And that's what the Jewish women did in Egypt. They had emunah in the moment. They believed in redemption, but they were willing to have children right now. They didn't say, I'll see it, I'll believe, what most people say, I'll believe it when I see it. They said, I'll see it when I do it. And they did it, and they saw it, and they believed it, and they carried on.
So did the women complain too, or just the men?
Just the men. The women are never complaining. The women have it totally together. All of them, not just some of them. All of them. People say, why aren't the women mentioned? It's like, do you want a list of 600,000 women's names? It's like all of them. We spoke about last week that they came like an army, like a tzava. They came to Moshe's tent to bring the mirrors as a tzava, as an army. So it's like, what's an army? An army means that you have a unified purpose, you are disciplined, and you have a mission, and you are all like on the same page. You don't break ranks. This is, that's what the Jewish women were. And they came like that with their mirrors. Okay, so that's the gift of the Jewish women. Another thing that was just a little funny that I'll share with you that Rebbetzin Mizrahi said is, so it says in the Talmud that Misha Nichmas Adar Marbim Basimcha, that when Adar comes in, you increase your simcha. And it's similar, it's phrased with the same thing, like when Av comes in, you minimize your simcha because we're getting ready for Tisha B'Av, the first 9 days of Av. So she said, what does this mean? It means just like what you do in Av to minimize your simcha, you should do the opposite in Adar. So it says, what happens in Av? So in Av, starting the first 9 days, there's a restriction. You can't eat meat. You cannot eat meat during the first 9 days of Av, except on Shabbos, but you can't have meat. So that means when Adar comes in, especially on Rosh Chodesh, what should you do? You should eat meat. Now, if you're a vegetarian, you don't have to, but you should make yourself something, whatever's like meaty to you. But if you eat meat, you should have meat on Adar, because that is the sign of Simcha. What else aren't you allowed to do? You're not allowed to listen to music starting the first night in the beginning of Av. So what should you do for Rosh Chodesh Adar? Listen to music and sing and dance. It says when you sing and dance, and again, you might feel stupid, even if you just dance with yourself. It says dancing turns us. It has an impact on our emotions. It has, as does music, and it raises us to a higher place. So to use music and dancing to elevate our mood and to make us happier. The other thing you're not allowed to do is buy new clothing. So I know it'll be hard, but go buy something new. Buy something new that is special to you.
If you must.
It says, be besimcha. So in the Talmud, and this may not be you, it says that for men primarily, and for people in general, but men specifically, that meat and wine makes them happy, and for women, it's clothes and jewelry, and that everybody should be happy. And so if you're going to increase happiness, you should do that for Rosh Chodesh Adar. Thankfully, Rosh Chodesh is a 2-day holiday this year. So tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh also. So if you don't have a chance to go shopping today, go tomorrow. And if you don't have a chance to have a, you know, wine today, have it tomorrow before Shabbos, not the Shabbos wine. Wine, meat, new clothes, dancing, music. In other words, it's a party. It's a party. The entire month of Adar is a party.
Chocolate,
absolutely. Whatever makes you happy. And this was funny, Rebbetzin Mizrahi said, and don't diet on Rosh Chodesh. She said that Adar, the spelling of Adar, she used some word I didn't know, but Adar spelled Aleph, Dalet, Resh. So she said Aleph is for Ein, there should not be, Dieta, diet, and I don't know, it's like Reshut or something. She used some other word like no diets allowed. It says diets make us unhappy. It says be happy, just eat something. You don't have to eat the whole month, but to eat on Rosh Chodesh, to make yourself happy. It says we have a lot that we can contribute, and we don't tend to think of ourselves. We think like, oh, I'll be happy when something good happens to us. It's like, no. Even just using the word, I'll be happy when something happens. The English word happy comes from the word happen. It just happens. It doesn't just happen. We don't have that word. We have simcha. Simcha comes from the word sham moach, like there in your mind. You make yourself happy, and you can create happiness by what you do. So it says, take all the things that make you happy. If something makes you happy, do it, because we're supposed to be happier in the month of Adar starting now. Okay, so go shopping, get wine, have something to treat to eat, listen to music, dance, put a smile on your face, and celebrate. And guess what? That kind of happiness is catching. You'll find that other people around you are going to be happier too if they see you like that. They're going to know what you've been smoking, probably. Okay. All right. Now, a final piece, and this is something I thought of that Hashem gave me this idea, and I want to share it with you before we leave the book of Shemot, before we leave the book of Exodus. The last parsha in the book of Exodus is the parsha of Pekudei. On the surface, it looks like the most boring. First of all, everyone is so tired of building of the Mishkan. It's the fourth and final parsha about the building of the Mishkan. And It basically talks about, on page 531, we're just going to follow in the signs, the reckonings of all the materials used for the work, the making of Aaron's vestments and the clothing for the Kohanim on page 533. It goes through each of them. Moshe is the chief contractor. He inspects everything. Moshe approves on page 537, and he's going to bless the people. And then the Mishkan is going to be set up on chapter 40, and it seems, again, very boring. He placed, on page 539, verse 24, he placed the menorah in the tent of meeting opposite the table on the south side of the tabernacle. Again, it looks like instructions to the moving van, the moving company. Where do you want everything? No, no, no. A little bit more to the right, a little bit more to the left. No here, no there. And it tells him exactly where everything is supposed to be. And it goes through, and everything is all set up on page 541. Everything is done. Hashem's presence rests there. And we will conclude the book of Shemot with Chazak, Chazak, Venit Chazek. But I want to go back to one of the items of the Mishkan that we spoke about before. And that has to do with page 539. And that is the laver. Verse 30. He emplaced the laver there. Beth Ann, would you like to read that, please? Verses 30 through 32.
He emplaced the laver between the tent of meeting and the altar, and there he put water for washing. Moshe, Aaron, and his sons washed their hands and feet in it.
From it. Mm-hmm.
When they came to the tent of meeting and when they approached the altar, they were washed, as Hashem had commanded Moshe.
Great. So this laver, as we've discussed before, what was it made from?
The mirrors.
The mirrors of the Jewish women. Okay, the mirrors of the Jewish women that they used in Egypt. And what did they use those mirrors for?
To look pretty.
To look pretty. To make sure their lipstick was on, their eyeliner, whatever. You know, pinch their cheeks, get some color, look nice. Why did they want to look pretty?
Entice
their husbands to have relations with them, to build the Jewish people. Because the Jewish women are all about, again, the emunah in action. It's like, I believe in the redemption of the Jewish people. What do you need first for the redemption of the Jewish people?
People.
People. Okay, so let's start with the first things first. We need people. So how are we going to have people? We need to have babies. How are we having babies? We need our husband's participation for that one. So how are we going to do that? Are we going to have a big speech and tell them about, I believe in God, and God's going to redeem us, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, nope, we're going to go the old-fashioned way. It's like, seduce him. Okay, so that's what each woman did, is to seduce her husband and have him, so they created the Jewish people. What came to mind, what Hashem gave me this idea, and I'm sure it is written about someplace else, but I have never seen it. So if you see it somewhere else, let me know. I'd be very happy to know it. Is what were those mirrors made out of?
Copper.
They were made out of copper. So the word for copper in Hebrew is nechoshet. The word for copper is nechoshet. That bears a very, very close resemblance to the word nachash. Okay, do you hear that? Nechoshet and nachash. Nun chet shin. Okay, nachash. What's the nachash?
The snake or serpent.
The snake or the serpent in the Garden of Eden. What was the snake's, what was his role? What did he do to Eve?
Deceived them.
Before he deceived, what enticed. The goal of the nachash was to say, doesn't this just look beautiful? Don't you want to eat it? And Eve fell for it. The word nachash has a gematria of 58. No, that's not right. That's not right. 358. Nun is 50. Chet is 8. And shin is 300. It happens to be the same gematria as the word Mashiach. Messiah. Redemption. It's like, okay, now those two things seem to have nothing to do with each other. Mashiach is Mem is 40. Shin is 300. Yud is 10, and Chet is 8. So they're the same. It's like, what does that mean? One is the antithesis of the other. But perhaps not only is it the antithesis, it may actually be telling us the pathway. The path to Mashiach is when the nachash can be tamed, when the nachash can be redirected. Because if we take what the nachash did to Eve, and then what Eve then did to Adam, that she tempts him also, just like everyone knows. It wasn't an apple, but she tempted him to eat also. She used her ability to, her feminine whatever, to get him to do the wrong thing, following the path of the Nachash, who got her to do the wrong thing, through his tempting. The women in Egypt take that exact same quality of temptation and turn it completely to the good. They take the power of temptation to get their husbands to do something that is following God's direction and God's desire of building the Jewish people that is going to bring redemption, which is Mashiach. This is what they did. They were able to, I'm picturing like them taking the serpent by the tail and saying, you know, you're not going to fool me. I'm going to use your very qualities to do exactly what needs to be done. It's going to be the opposite. They turned the Nachash into Nechoshet, and they used their mirrors, that same quality of tempting, to do God's will. This is what the Kohanim had to wash in. It's like, you want to, so like, what's the Mishkan all about? It's about how do we come close to Hashem? It's like, we come close. It's not some like we go to a top of a mountain, we go to Machu Picchu, we go to some place. We say, you take what all your passions, all your drives, all your desires, all the things that tempt you, everything like that, don't try to get rid of it. The goal is to transform it. You turn that Nachash into Nechoshet. You turn that snake into a mirror, and you use it for the good. And the Kohanim, it was a death penalty for them if they did not wash from this basin before they officiated. It's like, this is the whole point of everything. This is how we get Nachash to Mashiach. And this was the gift of the Jewish woman, being able to harness that. In that way and in that manner, they do a tikkun. They do a repair for how they went in the wrong direction from the Garden of Eden, how women went in the wrong direction, to going completely in the right direction. And it wasn't through saying, well, the answer is to get rid of mirrors, to get rid of temptations. Like, well, first of all, good luck with that. It doesn't really work. People have tried it. It doesn't work. The only answer is to harness. The only answer is to harness it. And that's what the Jewish women did. So having that in mind, this is, that is the gift of the Jewish woman, is to be able to manage and direct the physical world to serve a higher purpose. That's why the Kohanim are called the wives of the Beit HaMikdash. So they served in that same capacity to do that. Marla.
Also the snake, I don't know if it's later on, is used when a plague is spreading and Moses makes a copper snake. And
yes.
So it heals the people.
Exactly. And it does it for a similar reason as Moshe's arms being up. So what Marla's talking about is there's a plague and Moshe is commanded to make a copper snake. So then you have the two. You have a Nachash ben Nechoshet. You have a snake that is made out of copper to show that it's not, it says, the phrase is, it's not the snake's bite that kills, it's the sin. So it's what the people were doing wrong, and to hold it up, and the people would see it, and they would be healed. Many people think that's the origin of the sign for medical whatever, is that the serpent on the stick, that because it heals. It says, but what heals? It's the same thing as the hands up, because if the people are looking up, that always means looking up to Hashem, of saying, Hashem, oh, Hashem, I forgot about you. That stops me from doing what I was doing wrong. That's why it healed. It was like a homeopathic thing. They were being bit by serpents. That's what the plague was coming from, being bit. And it's like, well, then how do you change that? You use the very thing that's causing the problem and you redirect it. So it was redirected, like those serpents on the ground are going to turn into a Nachash of Nechoshet that is going to be held up to keep your eyes on Hashem. Same thing, Hakol Bidei Shamayim. So thank you for that, exactly the same thing. Month of Adar is very powerful. We're ending the Mishkan building and we're going to begin with the book of Vayikra, which then takes us into the path of, now that the holy place is set up, what do we need to do to be holy people? So now we've got the structure, we've got the use of all the materials, and now what about us as people? So the book of Vayikra, which is called Leviticus, which really means the code of holiness, is where we're going to start next week. So I want to wish you a tremendous Chodesh Tov, should have a good, happy, healthy month of Adar. All your prayers should be answered for good. They always say, be careful what you pray for, because we don't necessarily know. So we say, Hashem, give me whatever it is that's going to help me fulfill my purpose in the most comfortable way possible. So if anybody was in the synagogue this morning or goes tomorrow morning, they'll be singing Hallel, songs of praise, and thanking God for such an amazing day that has been created. So she take advantage of this 13th month, this number 13, which represents both Ahava, love, God's oneness, Echad, the 13 attributes of mercy, the being above and beyond the mazalot. There is no mazal. Everything is open. The transcripts have been burned. You're starting fresh. Nobody knows what you did before. And the most important person that needs to know that you are not confined but what you were yesterday, the most important person who needs to know that is ourselves. So to be happy. The final piece is go and make somebody else happy. Go and make somebody else happy, starting today and tomorrow, especially on Rosh Chodesh, and to make it a pledge for the month is to make somebody happy, one person happy each day. It says, what makes people happy? It says, first of all, make yourself happy, and we already talked about that. Okay. In addition to those things, it says, when you look in the mirror, like the Jewish women looked in the mirrors that they had, who do you see? If you see like, ugh, like, oh my gosh, the light's not so good in here, I look terrible. It says, if we cannot love ourselves, we cannot love another person. If we cannot find something amazing about ourselves, we will not be able to see it in other people either. It says, look in the mirror and say, give yourself a compliment and say how amazing you are. It says, we need to know our assets, our abilities, and say like, you know what? What was it, Telly Savalas or something? Who used to like, he was like, you know, good-looking guy. Or he used to do something like that. It's like, say something nice to yourself. Make yourself happy. Do things that make you happy for these 2 days especially and for the month. To make other people happy, it says, if you have children or grandchildren, what makes them happy is when you play with them. Play with them.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, play with them. That makes children happy. It says, if you have parents that are still alive, make them happy. Give them nachas. It says, don't whine and complain to them. Give them nachas. And how to make your spouse happy, if you have a spouse, is to do what they want you to do. It says, if they ask you to do something, just do it. And to say, my pleasure. I want to make you happy. They'll be so shocked they won't know what hit them, especially if it's something that you've resisted doing before, is just do it. Just do it. Just make something, like, do it as a favor. Usually when somebody asks us to do something, we have this whole calculation about who has the power in this, who gets to decide, why isn't it my way, why does it have to be his way? It's like, just don't make that calculation. Just do it. Unless, of course, it's immoral or unethical, then don't do it. But if it is just like there, whatever, just do it. So that will make people happy. So how do you make your friends happy? Is by being there for them. Just to call and say, hello, I've been thinking of you. So we can make people happy, and that's the month of Adar. It doesn't take too much, and it changes the world.
Okay. I just wanted to say, in Yiddish, there's no to be happy. It's all machen freilach. It's make happy.
Oh, that's so interesting.
It's not a state of being. It's a state of doing.
So that's very good. And yeah. the truth is, in Hebrew, it's either misameach, to make happy, like misameach hatan v'kala, to make the bride and groom happy, and there's specific ways of doing that, or to be besimcha, to be in or with a state of simcha. And there were supposed to be ivdu et Hashem besimcha. You're supposed to serve Hashem besimcha, which means with simcha and in simcha. And part of the understanding is your simcha is service of Hashem. So if you want to do a really big mitzvah, ivdu et Hashem b'simcha. Your simcha is service of Hashem. Just listen to Dennis Prager. Happiness is a serious problem. It's like being happy is service to Hashem, as long as it's not done through ways that are, again, immoral or unethical or illegal. Other than that, to be a happy person, you shed a tremendous amount of happiness on other people as well. All right, have a wonderful Shabbos, a beautiful, happy Adar, and I will look forward to seeing you next week.
I'm also reading that copper has healing.